Recording.
Hi.
Hello, Jeffrey John.
Was looking at the mission and vision statements.
There've been a few versions. There was one that Bridget drafted. There was one that came after you, Mary, and Bridget met. And then we spoke and more talked about mission than vision. And I think out of that came a few variations and one that I posted that you liked. But the vision statement garnered less positive feedback. So it seemed like that's something that we could work on and talk about. And it may just be you and me today.
I got that.
That's okay.
I'm not sure how much we can do the pair of us, but you never know. Maybe you had to do something.
Well, I feel that it's just a matter of kind of a distilling something that's already latent or already been discussed in some other fashion, or maybe in some other context. And it's also, I think, maybe a matter of tuning, like fine-tuning the knobs between like idealism and realism and maybe a few other aesthetic or just factors. So I thought I would ask you to start because I mean part of your work as a novelist is to envision worlds, fictional worlds.
True.
But you extrapolate from what from the present and from what is possible, and then you construct something different from there that's resembles but is also, significantly different in some key ways than the world that we know as the real world. Like you exercise in vision, you practice that in your craft. How might you begin to apply that to the realm of an organization or the realm of a community in
So,
actuality, not just
yeah.
in a novel?
So I was struck by the discussion about contradiction and paradox that Johnny brought forward. And I thought, yeah, we should probably incorporate some of that into our vision statement because it guarantees that the vision isn't reductive if we do that. I mean, almost guarantees. I suppose it depends what contradictions you put in, but the problem with any sort of vision statement is it tends to be reductive in some sense, right? It tends to feel like you're boxing the world in.
Or it could be the other way around. It's kind of open, but it's vague and
Vague,
kind
yeah,
of airy,
exactly.
or like not really compelling.
So what if we were to do that just as an exercise? What, don't want to say central, but what key paradox is implicated inside Cosmos, Infinite Conversations, the whole kit and caboodle, as it were?
I think there are a few. I don't know which are appropriate. And I think part of the question is, what is the scale implied, or what is the scope implied by the vision? And when I think of some of the paradoxes, I mean, one of them is that there is a thing called the cosmos, at least that we call the cosmos in English, and it names, I mean, it has gone through different usages over time. It had a usage in ancient Greek. It has a modern usage and various ones of those, but it means the whole. It means all of creation. It means everything, not just this universe, but all possible universes, metaverses, multiverses. It all is named by that. The organization itself is a particularity within that larger cosmos. So it's a reflection of the whole. In some way, it's an opening to or toward the whole, but it also has to function as a human scale organization and community, not just as a kind of cosmic scale or cosmic consciousness kind of. So I think that's one of the paradoxes, is that we're referring to the whole, but we're doing so from the vantage of particularity. One of them too is like that, is that between evolution and being. The cosmos, if it truly is eternal, which it is by definition, or just by intuit, by knowing, by gnosis, then we have movements of evolution, and we may want to advocate or valorize or champion, you know, some kind of movement of evolution. But at the same time, the cosmos is never more, is always complete. It simultaneously complete, whole, quote unquote, perfect, but also unfinished.
Coming.
Imperfect, yeah. Coming. And so there's, I think, a paradox there as well, that it just doesn't have there's not a straightforward way to say it in English, but there is some way, I think, to configure it or like to.
I think I found the way, the word vision that you produced on the last round a bit too wordy.
Mm-hmm.
You want something a bit more pithy somehow. I don't know. I hate to say your stuff isn't pithy, because a lot of your stuff is, but this particular expression is not quite there. Yeah.
Well, I'll admit I wrote it pretty quickly, and just in order to, I guess, move the conversation forward. And we hadn't really discussed it either. We had talked mission, and I think what I wrote for mission grew out of the iterations that we did with
Mary. It felt that way. Yeah.
This one came more out of left field, and I think that there's some sense of a future world, maybe, or a future world possibility that's there, a future civilization. The butterfly civilization, I think, is something if it's not in there, we discussed it. But
so, what about, it's a crazy idea, but what about this idea that the state of organizational being to which we as cosmos are moving is I'm also thinking about this idea that the future is pulling us rather than we are in some sense pushing it. This idea of a different relation to time. So the sort of organizational being we are drawn towards is I guess it's the all important is that is the issue, though.
What about that organizational being?
Yeah, that sounds like Johnny.
I felt like I was channeling him for a moment there. Does it have a size or a shape?
Yeah, it doesn't have a size or a shape, exactly. And maybe I think they're good questions, right?
I think so. But it seemed that you had something on the tip of your mind.
Yeah, I'm just not quite there yet. I guess I'm thinking, I'll tell you where it came from, thinking about this, you know, because we had this idea of emergent in the mission statement. I have, and you were asking about my writing, and I tend to think of, I'm very interested in this idea of an emergent God. That is to say, an all-powerful, all-doable being which comes into existence through the process of, I don't know, spiritual development, enlightenment, whatever. It's such a paradoxical thing to say. Because if it's all powerful and all doable, then it exists in all time. So this idea that it comes into existence through the process is itself a paradox. And it's very, you know, we were talking in the synthesis of yoga today about Chardin's vision. It's very Chardinian kind of, you know, with this idea of moving towards a mega point, I think. Was that mm-hmm. his yep. thing? So this this idea of the emergence or the becoming of something, right? So in a sense, that is what a vision is. So I'm sort of, we're talking tautology in a sense, but
in a way, the vision is the beginning of the coming into being of the thing that is envisioned.
And right, or the path towards it or something. You
know. The language for it, for yeah. perhaps, at least in the case of a statement. But we could also imagine, I think we need the words, but we could imagine visualizations and more economical ways of transmitting certain ideas. I will say that having reviewed some of the key docs and some of the older materials, that I mean, actually, before I say that, there's the question too of who the vision is for and how does kind of the intended or the mature version of cosmos relate to the like incipient or seed form as far as who is responding to this vision, like who's resonating with the vision. Because I think that even though some of us identify as being artists or writers or poets or creatives or creators, that those are in a way conventional labels that we apply for conventional things that we do. And we also have these other, let's say, more occult identities or more.
And Cosmos kind of devised those categories, because although there are some of us who produce work in the more classical sense, there are many people on Cosmos who do not in that sense, and yet are as present for the evolving nature of what we're doing as those of us who are more artistically identified, you know? So
exactly. So how do we include not just the professionals, but the and not just the amateurs, but those who don't or prefer not to or don't feel called to identify in any particular way and yet participate in the spirit or have the quality of consciousness or the openness or the receptivity or the desire or the values or whatever it is that defines who really is a member of Cosmos, who is a potential member of Cosmos, the cooperative, like assuming it's not necessarily 8.5 or 10 billion people, although it could be.
Like, yeah, because that's the other thing, is distinguish between my vision of the future versus the organization Cosmos vision. You know, it's not, don't have to be identical. In fact, they're not going to be.
And the Cosmos itself, the Cosmos' vision itself, its own vision of the future, regardless of our vision, mine or yours or ours or a collective. I mean, that's the other, I think, aspect of it. It's kind of co-creative, or it's like it's a, ideally it's a dance with history, and you know, we're not trying merely to deny history or to somehow like leap over, you know, like we need to grapple with it and grapple with emergent technologies, emergent business models, or just economic factors, and people factors, that like the way that people are, you know, what they're drawn to, what their, where their attention is going. What's significant? Maybe it matters, and maybe it doesn't. Like we have to in a way choose what's relevant. But I think ideally, I would like Cosmos to be like in the grandest scale that anyone could join it. Anyone could gain something from it, have a positive experience, get some value out of, etc. Like that at the just widest level. That it's not, there isn't an artificial boundary, because anybody could play this game. Like like anybody can do what we're doing, not necessarily the poetry or the art or whatever, but more of the essence of it, which
thinking about where we're going as a group, as a species, as a planet, the visionary part, and everybody can take part in it. It's not just, I'm not saying that's the only thing that's going on, but that's certainly part of what's going on.
Yeah, that definitely. And I was going to say this, the actualization, like the bringing forth of potentials, that there's something post or trans utilitarian. It's non-reductive. Like I think we're trying to allow the gifts of an individual, the gifts of a group to show themselves and to manifest, to become realized. And that takes certain conditions. Like it won't necessarily happen. It usually doesn't happen when there's strict requirements around productivity or around you know, certain conceptions of timing, how fast something has to happen. I mean, these are constraints that belong to a capitalist economy. And we're trying to take a step beyond that to envision a sort of post-scarcity economy. Like, let's begin to imagine what we would do if we weren't constantly in a struggle for survival.
So this gift economy idea, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know how that gets in, but I was also thinking of something we said, maybe about this idea about contradiction. So it reminded me of something. So I dug up the invocation that we read every time we do read from Aurobindo's Secret of the Veda. And it's an invocation. I don't remember where it comes from exactly. It's something that Matsya or Vishnu or had developed, brought forward from somewhere. So I'll read that. I don't want us to take the whole thing, but I'll read it and then I'll tell you what I think is relevant from the whole thing. So,
sure.
Salutation to the eternal who is without place, time, cause, or limit. Salutation to him who rules the universe, the Lord of illusion, the master of manifold life. Salutation to the self in me, who is the self in all creatures. Brahman, Isha, Atman, under whatever aspect he manifests himself or manifests not, to him, the one and only existence, consciousness, bliss, salutation. So it's this, well, it's a couple of things. This salutation to the self in me, who is the self in all creatures. That's something that I think is really interesting and maybe resonates with our efforts inside Cosmos as an organization. And the other thing is this, under whatever aspect he manifests himself or manifests not. So there you have the duality and the contradiction, not really contradiction somehow, it's more a paradox than a contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
But this idea of having a vision, so almost, I'm not saying that would be the way you do it, but a vision for a kind of artist whole, for the artists or the non-artists, or you know, for the sort of anyway, I'm not quite sure how to do that, but this idea of both the thing and the not thing.
I was also struck by the Lord of Illusion, because one would tend not to praise an illusionist.
Right. But
there's this recognition that, you know, the same power which, you know, is at the source of creation is also at the source of our delusions, or, you know, our false beliefs about creation. So that even the illusion is part of the creative.
That's right.
The creative manifestation. I don't know how to word any of this, but I think it's good just to get it out and put it in the field. And,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think the idea of there being a creative spark, a divine spark that everyone shares, that everyone participates in, that self that is in all creatures, and that, you know, cosmos envisions a community, a world, a space in which, you know, that divine spark is brought forth, is allowed to, you know, is encouraged, is invited, is welcome, is nurtured, is allowed to, you know, catch fire, is allowed to manifest
catch itself fire.
Or not to
or not
actualize or to. But that's, and then we would, and this was something Caroline was really, I think, strong with, is the idea of there being processes and there being kind of protocols, that rituals, you know, that when somebody becomes involved, that in some way, like, they're welcomed, and, you know, we try to maybe get at what, you know, they're really here for, what they need, what does their soul need to take the next step, like that. This would be a place where, you know, if somebody has that burning desire to write something or paint or start a business or start some other kind of mission, you know, that they could kind of bring that into the space and get good feedback on it and get some help developing it. And maybe it gets manifest through cosmos and maybe it doesn't. Like, maybe this becomes a launching point for something else. But that the organization is oriented towards, like, one of the, like, we set up the incentives, or we set up the system such that the incentive is to find what that thing is and to assist it. It's not to kind of find out where that person is going to spend the most money and then, like, you know, offer them that particular product or service. Like we're looking at the logic underlying it, and we're looking at the person, we're looking at the being, the soul, and what part of them is true, in a sense, like what part of them is ready to do something, is ready to, you know, to manifest in some way, and then to support that. Now, specifically, that has taken the shape of publishing and of conversations, community conversations, but potentially it could also show up in different ways. Like, maybe it's just this conversation, like a small group that's for, self-awareness or for cultivation, or, you know, maybe it's a kind of accelerator, an incubator for an entrepreneurial kind of idea, or, you know, there can be a lot of different things that happens if the platform is general enough and if it has those good processes and protocols and kind of step-by-step, how do you do X? How can you, you know, pursue X? And here are the steps that you take to do that. And like you said in the last meeting, you know, where there's complexity, there's a lot of support, like video tutorials or whatever, or personal guidance, you know, to help you get through things. But that's more at the level of operations. I mean, it's meant to value or honor a person's participation, like their conscious energy, and to amplify it. That's another thing that Caroline also highlighted, is there's like an amplification, a merging, a connecting with others, kind of a weaving of individuals' passions and their interests And then we, in a way, like Cosmos provides an infrastructure or a space in which projects can unfold. So Metapsychosis, for example, is one example, it's one project. It's one, but let's say it's using some of the same principles or the same infrastructure, another group of members could come up with their own project and use the common infrastructure, the technical and legal and economic framework to launch something different. In that original statement, not original, but the one that Brigid compiled, it was very simple. We open a space for writers, artists, and other creators to work together toward realizing an inclusive cultural transformation for the 21st century and beyond. And there's actually, I think, a lot that's captured in there, which maybe resonates with what I was just speaking about. But it doesn't so much capture like the paradox.
It's easier to go back because it's maybe easier to go back to that one than it's easier to get head around
than mine for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
Like just giving the structure, like, okay, there's a space. Cosmos is a space. Maybe that's not the right word, but there's a sense in which it's a container. Like at a metaphorical, like this is a container. And then for whom it is, and then for what. That's the structure of that statement. And then it's situated in time, 21st century, which I'd like to rethink. I'd like to not use that framing for time, but I think there is a sense of the time that Cosmos is also an organization or enterprise, a community for this time.
Okay.
And like
we had a Google thing. Not sure if I can find it now. I guess if I just open my Google Docs, I'll be able to find it. We had one for the vision statements.
The one that Mary shared last time?
Yeah.
Let's see, I should be able to pull it up.
Because we can sort of start noodling around in if we want.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, hang on, I hear a Cosmos mission and vision statement, here it is. So if we skip down to the end and put back in Bridget's thing, we can start screwing around with it a little bit. Maybe not write the terminology, but to...
we'll tweak.
Have you got it?
Actually, I need the link.
Okay.
I'm still trying to log in.
I'll give you the link. Oh, hang on. Oh, yeah, that's tricky. I'll give you the link via Infinite Conversations because I can't give it to you. I'm working on the PC and I'm talking on the iPad. So.
Oh, maybe it's there already. No.
Hang on. I'll find it in a moment. I just have to find you. My phone. And send you a little message. So I put it into your message in the Infinite Conversations.
Yep, got it. There we go. I'm there.
Okay. See, writers, artists. I mean, I suppose the artists is, I mean, in a sense, writers are artists. And artists is the broader term than writers, but
I tend to associate artists with the visual arts.
Yes, I know. So I don't think it's the vision is to work together. I think the vision is, I'm just going to try this. You can do it at the same time if you want, but anyway, it's not right, but.
Well, would you want to just, like we did last time, I thought it was useful to just take a few minutes and.
Yeah, maybe.
Did you write something? And just based on what we've discussed so far, I think we can come up with really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just gonna paste what I have in.
Yeah, so I was trying to break with the draft classic forms and do something a bit different, but
more like a sort of a call. What do you say?
Yeah,
transformations are called. Okay, that's got a little more juice than mine does.
It needs to be, you know, it's very crude in some sense, but this idea that the future is pulling us rather than, yeah, you've got that too.
Yeah, mine is focused maybe on the individual. But the sense of a emergence, the sense of a future kind of drawing us toward its omega or its realization, that's exciting if we can get that in.
Yeah, if we can figure out how to say it. Yeah. And I got this thing about revelations is the sort of contradiction, you know, so you know, collective, but also individual, and maybe also rebellions of some sort, right? So, I mean, some of the work that is emitted is very rebellious in some sense. I think it actually coincides with our current practice.
Rebellious, maybe subversive too.
Subversive, yeah, I think that's what I mean. But, what we could do, what we tried the other time, is rewrite our own statements, trying to include the other person's ideas into our statement, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'll take yours. I just pasted in my short one. I also like the term of cultural transformation, which was from
the original.
So let's see if I can work that in.
I pasted mine in.
Okay. I think I've got something. Feels good. Give me 1 minute. Thank you. I just gotta find the oh, here we go. All right. Okay, so where would I find your?
Just straight above it.
Immediately above. Sapient transformations are calling for collective voices of inclusion, for individual creative genius, and also subversive expression of difference. Within this process of poetic engagement, we seek to coax the emergence of a world with new and powerful modes of becoming. Okay. How about we read this out loud?
Yeah.
I'll read yours. Incipient transformations are calling for collective voices of inclusion, for individual creative genius, and also for subversive expression of difference. Within this process of poetic engagement, we seek to coax the emergence of a world with new and powerful modes of becoming. Okay.
I'll do yours.
Yeah.
Something new is happening on planet Earth. The old ways, structures, and institutions are dying. A new world is coming into being. We are called to participate in the evolution of consciousness as rebel communities and cultural creators. In Cosmos, we envision a world in which all people are able to contribute their unique creative spark through the power of cooperation. I want to combine the best of both.
I like the fragments from each one, and I like poetic engagement, transformations.
I like the rebel communities part as well. Something new is happening on planet Earth. I agree with that. Not sure that the old ways and structures and institutions are dying exactly. Mm. Maybe yeah. They will eventually, but that seems a little bit strong for me. To me.
Mm. Well, yeah, I guess the problem is that they're not dying.
making a lot of noise if they are. I suppose the idea of a new world is implicit with the idea that the old one is changing in some sense. So.
Yeah, we don't have to say that the old one is dying. I mean, that's kind of negative anyway for a vision.
Yeah, I agree. What about something new? Well, a new world that's almost redundant.
Mm-hmm.
So you could take out the old world structures and a new world is coming to being, because that's pretty redundant with the something new is happening. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, what is new? And there's a few things I think we could point to, but they're not so new. In a way, it depends on your perspective. I think like what is referred to as the axial age, the axial revolution, brought a new kind of consciousness, a kind of universal consciousness onto the earth plane, you know, into human history. And, you know, that
we're post-axial.
Well, yeah. And I think also depending on how one understands, that axial, that turn, and like more from, ontology, you know, as it establishing a kind of universal being and a kind of opening to this principle and in a few different expressions in Judeo-Christian history and Hinduism and Buddhism and Taoism. I mean, they all kind of, all these world religions emerge at more or less the same time within a few hundred years, maybe, you know, a couple thousand years, let's say, at the farther end. But there's something also that is like incomplete about them, in that they establish a transcendence and they establish a relationship between the human plane and the transcendent plane, but they don't establish the integration. They don't establish kind of the re-enveloping or the embrace of immanence, the embrace, which is more something that, I mean, you find aspects of this in the various traditions, and there's times when a non-dual perspective, you know, comes more into play, like in Buddhism through Nagarjuna and the you know, what they call the Madhyamika, or the second turning, I think, of the wheel, is sometimes referred to. But more in Western thought, I think it's more of a something that in that modern philosophy takes up, is like the call of immanence, you know, the call of the earth. And, you know, as we get perspective on the earth and its fragility and its transience, and, you know, we no longer take it for granted, there's also an embrace of immanence. And in some cases, it's also a denial of transcendence. And there's kind of a rejection of those, you know, previous kind of visionary or grand, you know, narratives. But I think that what we've been working with in Cosmos through our studies of Aurobindo and Gebser and Wilbur and, you know, various other integral thinkers is bringing those aspects of the whole together. And it's more of an integral future that I think we're being drawn to, where like neither of the possibilities is left out. They're both embraced. And we are imagining how to live creative lives, contribute to a larger kind of restructuring or a larger healing also, you know, of the traumas and divisions that in a lot of ways are partly caused by that kind of dualistic or separative worldview. So there's something of the cultural work that we're doing in like embodying an integral way of being or integral potential. And there's something particular about the path of art, the creative path or the aesthetic path, that kind of just provides a nexus where we can do that in a very full way. But I don't know how that boils down. Maybe we should.
I think maybe it needs to gestate a little bit, like we did last time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're not far from something that is. It's kind of a bit of word craft, almost at this point. I don't know what you think, but.
I don't tend to write well when I'm on the spot. I prefer to take my time and tinker and kind of mull on the verses.
But I mean, we came out with something that's quite different from what we had in some ways to begin with, that has more bite to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, why don't we just take a little time then, and, you know, we could post some new ideas to the thread.
Post the new versions,
mm-hmm.
and see what comes back.
Yeah, I'll actually probably rework it a bit, and I'll post something that I feel
good about. Yeah, yeah.
And we'll see what comes back. But I think, you know, just having these couple of statements will be a really good, big, actually a big step. And I think it'll enable us to branch out and answer the other questions. This is going to still take a few months, probably.
Oh, I agree. But I really think for the first time, I'm feeling that the vision statement, or either one of these, or some mix of them, has got the substance that one, I think, is that honors the work going on in Cosmos. Whereas the earlier versions, they had some of the elements, but they didn't feel very rich or strong somehow. I think these are better, I think. I hope, anyway.
I think we'll see. I agree. I think I can feel a little better to me. It feels like we've opened up the space to, like, more where Cosmos is, what is its field of action, one could say. I feel more of a sense of resonance with that now. So maybe just the act of talking about it, getting some notions out and attuning, kind of gives us the, almost like the musical key or something that we need to work within.
Good.
Yeah. So I guess we'll talk again soon.
Not next week, is it the week after, I guess?
I think it's next week.
Oh, is it next week?
The week for this, but I think we'll do Savitri next week.
Savitri, but in the afternoon, but then...
Not a metapsychosis.
Nothing in the evening.
No.
Okay.
And like I told Mary, I'm going to be working on your manuscript, I think, August. I'm going to give myself a month. And I'm thinking about maybe finding a place, a spot of land or something up in the mountains, and taking a couple of weeks just by myself to get a bunch of writing and reading done. So I think that might be just what I need after everything I've been through with my mom, my dad.
I understand. Yeah.
So I'm thinking maybe the second part of August, those 2 or 3 weeks, I'll be doing that. And my plan at this point would be to take your manuscript, Brian's manuscript, and then my own.
I hope mine doesn't need all that much work at this point. I'm crossing my fingers. Yeah.
We'll
However,
see.
I do understand that it takes the work that it takes, and that's the way it works, you know.
Yeah. There's not much we can do about that.
No.
But to me, the important thing is just finding the clearings, you know, to do the work, whether it's the writing work or the editorial work, and having the space and time for that is the most important thing right now.
Yeah, I'm going away too, just for a week in the second week of August. I'm just going to Montreal for a few days, but I will be participating in the Savitri and whatever.
And you're going to see Andrea too, right?
In end of September.
Okay. Nice. That's very cool. Okay, good. Till next time then.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for this. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.